Welcome to the Storytelling with Data podcast, where listeners around the world learn to be better storytellers and presenters. We'll cover a wide range of topics that will help you effectively show and tell your data stories. So get ready to separate yourself from the mess of 3D exploding pie charts and deliver knockout presentations. And with that, here's me, Randy. Hi, folks. Welcome to the Storytelling with Data podcast. So one of my favorite questions that I hear people ask Cole when she's doing a speaking event or talk, specifically on being a better presenter, is, were you always a great public speaker? Are you just a natural at this? It's funny for me because I've known Cole for a long time now, actually since Storytelling with Data was born, not to mention the three kids of ours that were also born along the way. But I've seen Cole from her very first speaking opportunities to today. In fact, fun origin story to share dates back to the very first time I'd meet my future wife. It was at the Google PeopleOps conference in Monterey in 2010. This was a learning event for the global team, and we all descended on Monterey, California for a day of sessions led by other Googlers. I was with a colleague of mine from Zurich, where I was with Google at the time, and we looked in the program and saw this talk on communicating with data. This looks interesting. So we entered the small conference room, and it has many open chairs, and he and I did as one should, and we sat in the front row. I was intrigued, excited, and in awe. And that was just the presentation. Needless to say, Cole was even more amazing. But she wasn't the stellar presenter you see today. That took time, practice, and refinement over the course of hundreds and hundreds of workshops and speaking opportunities. Her journey and the lessons learned along the way are all outlined in her third book, Storytelling With You. Highly recommend this book to anyone who has to stand in front of an audience and speak. I also recommend today's podcast, which is a recast of a recent interview she did with Allie Torben on the DataViz Today podcast. Allie talks with Cole about strategies for delivering data presentations, particularly for introverts, of which Cole often describes herself. From identifying and managing nervous habits to intentionally adjusting style while maintaining authenticity. You'll enjoy as they share quick tips and broad strategies to put into practice. Discover how to signal confidence even before you actually feel it, and learn about real-time data collection techniques to continually refine your speaking skills. So tune in, listen to some actionable insights that you can apply whether you're presenting informally to your colleagues or commanding attention in front of a crowd. Hope you enjoy today's recast of Allie Torben's DataViz Today.
Hey, you're listening to episode 94 of DataViz Today. I'm Allie Torben, an information designer and author of ChartSpark. And this show is here to help you become a more effective and creative information designer. Thanks for joining me. So recently, I came to realize that there's a skill in our DataViz work that we don't pay enough attention to. And it's not learning how to code or color theory. It's the ability to speak in front of other people without feeling absolute terror. I definitely started out feeling terrified speaking in front of other people. I remember in high school, I had to give a presentation in front of my English class. And I thought that if I spoke quietly enough, then maybe people wouldn't notice that I was nervous. It turns out nobody could even hear me speaking, and someone in the back row kept yelling out, "We can't hear you." And so I started talking faster to try to end the torture while still whispering through my presentation. So needless to say, I am not a natural speaker, but through a lot of practice, I have lost a bit of the terror when I speak in front of other people. And I've come to realize that it's elevated my career in so many ways. When people hear you and see you, they know what you're working on and want to collaborate with you. When you're on a data team, your manager can rely on your superpower of speaking in front of people so they don't have to worry about it. Also, this is one of those skills that you can use anywhere you go, no matter the industry or your role. You can be a critical member of the team if you have the skill of not being terrified to speak in front of people. And notice I didn't say that you need to be the orator of the century. All you need to do is take some steps to get over your terror, and you'll be way, way, way ahead of most people. And then from there, your speaking skills will grow with practice. Now, I believe that this skill is so important that I called in the best of the best to back me up on this. We have Cole Nussbaumer-Naflick on the show today. Cole is a powerhouse data storyteller and presenter, the CEO and founder of Storytelling with Data, best-selling author of three books, Storytelling with Data, Storytelling with Data Let's Practice, and her latest, Storytelling with You, which shares Cole's step-by-step process of planning, creating, and delivering presentations. So in today's show, Cole shares how to identify those little nervous things you do when you present, and then specific exercises to overcome them so you can become a more confident presenter. All right, now let's jump into my conversation with Cole. And first up, I asked her if she's always been a great presenter.
No. And I think actually, if I rewind and were younger Cole looking at me now, I would be in utter disbelief because I was never a stand in front of people, be comfortable sort of person. I'm an introvert. My comfortable space is behind my computer in a room by myself.
Reading a book, drinking some tea.
Exactly. Yeah, that's my happy place, right? But interestingly, over time, the stage has also become a comfortable place as well. And it's been through a lot of work and trial and error, because I think I realized early on that if I stayed in my comfortable space, I was never going to be able to have the impact that I wanted to.
Right. Have you heard that analogy where someone said, like, a lobster outgrows its shell? And it gets uncomfortable, you know, because the shell's too small and it gets uncomfortable. Okay. And then it sheds its shell and has to grow a new one. But the fact being, like, if you feel uncomfortable, it probably means you're growing.
I love it. Yeah, I think of it as productive discomfort. Mm-hmm. If you have a goal at the end of it that you can articulate, but there's this zone of discomfort in the meantime, that's when the discomfort becomes productive because it's for a specific purpose. And so I think it's one way of just reframing when we feel nerves or when we feel uncomfortable to actually look at that as a really interesting sort of chasm to cross to get to the other side.
Mm-hmm. Where am I going with this? So in order to have productive discomfort, you probably have to be able to see where you're going with this discomfort. Like, if you don't see anything at the end there, like, on why I'm even trying to get there, then it's hard to think,
and I think
you
may not know the where, but you know the why, right? Mm. Why do I need to do this? And for me, stepping out from behind the computer, it was because I've learned these things about how to make a graph that seem to work. And I'd like to be able to teach other people that and have the enthusiasm and excitement around being able to get people to see something in a different way and maybe do smarter things as a result of that. I want to share this. And so for me, the passion around it, I think, was really what got me around the first handful of, like, you know, when I think back, really bad presentations where people were willing to sit with me through it and be patient through it because of the passion that ends up being contagious. And that's one thing that's become apparent to me over time, I think, both in presenting myself, but watching other people present, helping my team present, is that if you can't find the reason that what you're talking about is interesting and be genuinely interested in it yourself, there's no way you're going to get other people interested in it. But conversely, if you turn that around, right, if you can find the interesting thing, the nugget, you know, the thing that you found that nobody else knows, and now you get to be the one to share that, you can turn that into a really interesting energy to use when you're then talking to others about your work.
Yeah. And it does, if you can lean into the passion, it kind of helps with the nerves a little bit.
Yes. Because then you know your stuff, right? If you can get into a space where you feel comfortable, because that's something that I think we maybe don't fully recognize. But when we feel comfortable when we're speaking, you know, whether it's to one person or to a room full of people, that helps the people who are listening to you feel comfortable. Mm. And when you feel discomfort, and when that discomfort is palpable, right? Shaking voice, shaking hands, body language, where you're just looking uncomfortable, that makes the people with whom you're trying to engage feel uncomfortable as well. Mm-hmm. So I think a big part of feeling ready, feeling good, feeling comfortable when you are presenting or when you're getting ready to present is just identifying the things that either scare you or that are going to make you uncomfortable during the actual presentation so that you can try to take those away. Mm-hmm. And we can talk about really tactical ways to do that if you want to drill into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And thinking more about the why too, feeling like a passion for the subject is one thing, but I have also found that being able to get past my fear of speaking in front of other people, like I still feel it, but like on the journey,
yes,
to getting past the fear, it has made me really valuable on my team. Because I remember a few years ago when I first started thinking, okay, I am going to try to be a better public speaker. I was in a team setting and our team had to present to other teams on what we were doing. And my boss, he was just like terrified of getting up in front of people. And so I was like, I could do it. And I did it.
Awesome.
It was okay. But in his eyes, I was like the star team member because I took away such a huge pain point for him personally. So I was thinking, yes, like, if this team member, anybody on this team gets laid off, like I'm going to be the last person getting laid off because I provide such a pain relief for him in terms of being able to speak in front of other people.
Yes. And I think that's going to be the case for anyone who finds themselves typically in a more analytical, more quantitative type role, mm-hmm, because it's not so often that you see those skills together where somebody both is comfortable with the numbers and the statistics and the technical aspects and also able to talk about that in a way that makes sense to other people who may not have any of that background. And so for anyone who's listening and wondering, is this a skill set that makes sense to spend time developing? Yes, absolutely. Because to your point, it's going to put you ahead of most of your peers, if not all of them, when you can spend time focusing on yourself, mm-hmm, and how you speak and how you interact with others, right? And it's really cool because it helps you not only in the professional parts of your life, but it helps you just engage on a personal level with people in general. Mm-hmm. So whether someone works with data or not, we all need to talk to each other.
Yeah.
And we got pretty out of practice in the past few years. And so spending time developing those skills so that they don't become inhibiting, right? Where you're not the manager who's so afraid of talking in front of others that you can't do it.
And the thing is, you don't have to be the most amazing person in the world at speaking. You just have to be like the least terrified person on your team.
That's it. Yes. If we're going like stepping stones, that would be a good place to start.
You don't just have to have a high bar. Just be the least terrified on your team.
Yeah. Well, and I think often people look at someone who, you know, I wish I could present like that person, that, you know, that professional, that expert. They're so natural. Look at just how fantastic they are. And I'd like to argue that nobody starts out that way. Right? Some people might start out more comfortable there, but nobody starts out as a good presenter. Anyone you see who does it well has honed that over time. And I hate the excuse of, well, you know, I'm just not a good presenter. Mm. You know, that's so-and-so would be better at that than me. It's like, well, no, that's just an excuse not to work on those skills, mm-hmm, because anyone can be. I'm proof in that, right? I used to be the shaking leaf, full of filler words, and just, I would have never put myself in a position where I would be talking in front of a group because, mm-hmm, of those nerves. But getting over that and seeing how much impact you can have. And I think using the real-time data that you're able to collect when you present, for those of us who are analytically minded, is fascinating. You get it immediately and at scale when you watch people's facial expressions and body language and what they're doing, where you can see pretty quickly when you do something that either causes people to tune out or to stay with you. Mm-hmm. And so I think for me, when I look back at it, and I definitely wouldn't have recognized this at the time, but looking back, I learned how to present in a very similar way in which I learned how to make graphs and show data, which is just trial and error and learning over time what works and what doesn't, and doing more of the things that work, less of the things that don't work. Because for me, I've been in front of people hundreds, probably thousands of times. And whether it's one person or a group of people, you get that instantaneous feedback. And sometimes in a setting where you can even drill into it and ask questions about why something worked or didn't. Or, you know, you can try things like walking around the room and understanding how, where you stand, or what you do with your hands and your body can invite people in or make a barrier between you and them. And so honing that over time is something that anyone who wants to and is aware and, yeah, putting themselves in that productive discomfort sort of category, anyone can do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very accessible to anyone who wants to try and make those small steps. But I remember it feeling really hard to even take that first step because of those things you were just talking about, how, like, you know, the shaking, or for me, like, I just get talking faster and faster and faster and faster, and I can't breathe. So just knowing, like, those physical things that happen to you and you feel like you can't control them. Can you describe a little bit about maybe the things that happened to you and then how you tried to start getting over that?
Yeah. And I think this is a valuable exercise for anyone to do, which is really think about what pieces of presenting or talking in front of other people, what parts of it make you nervous? Because if you can really get specific on that, you can do very tactical things to help make yourself more comfortable. So let's go through a variety of those. If I am afraid I'm going to forget something important that I want to make sure I say, you know, maybe it's somebody's specific name that I want to refer to, or it could be anything, right? Something specific that I don't want to forget. And I'm afraid I'm going to forget. Well, rather than just let that fear get to me, I can write it on a post-it note and stick it in my pocket where I know I can pull it out if I need to refer to something. Or if I'm presenting slides, I might put the words or, you know, something that's going to prompt me to remember on the slide itself or in the speaker notes. So I can basically just take away that fear altogether by building my content or having something with me that's going to help. Let's take another example. So here's one, maybe too much information, but that I'll share because I think it's something other people struggle with too, which is if I'm nervous, I overheat and then I sweat. And so I don't want to look sweaty. Well, then I should be careful about what I wear. And so over time I learned, well, if I do like a sleeveless top under a blazer, that'll be a good scenario because either I have the blazer on, you can't see my sweatiness, right? Or I can take it off and be cooler. So planning attire, which this sounds like a really funny thing, but that's something I always recommend. And particularly if you have any nerves, is do a test run of everything you plan to wear, from accessories, right? Are we in glasses or earrings? What shoes you're going
hair
to
hair up or down?
For? Yes. Is your hair up or down? Which sounds funny, but if you have a microphone that's on your lapel and you don't realize until you're walking on stage that if you move your head to the right, your hair brushes across it and it's this awful noise. Like that's really hard to overcome in the moment if you're already feeling nervous.
Yeah.
And so the more you can find out those things ahead of time and just change them if you need to, so that they don't become one more thing adding to your nerves.
Yeah. And it does sound, I think it could sound a little bit woo-woo to people where you say like, oh, just think about your fears. But it is so important to think about where that stuff is coming from. I have found that in my own journey too, where just thinking about why am I actually nervous about being in front of people? And a lot of it came for me was just like feeling like I am not good enough. I'm not saying something that's worthy of speaking in front of other people. And that was a huge fear for me. So like having all these eyes on me, it's like, who am I to be up here? And once I addressed that, and it's still a work in progress, but just thinking like I do have a story to tell, and you might not agree with everything I have to say, but I can at least tell you my perspective and it can help you or not, take it or leave it. Even just that little bit of mental shift has taken my nerves down a little bit.
Yeah. Well, that imposter syndrome, I think, is something that's common. Anyone doing any sort of creative work has that at some point in some way. And yeah, recognizing that, no, but if you're the one who's been asked to speak or you have a reason to, that you have a reason and people want to be there. Or if they don't, you're going to prove to them why they should.
And often you are doing better than you think you are too. Because I did one presentation once and I said, I felt like I was really struggling through that. And someone was like, oh, I thought you did great. Like people obviously don't know all the time.
Yes. We often are our own worst critics because we in our heads build this ideal version of what we should look like or how we should sound or how we should look. And so when we perceive a gap between that ideal that we've built in our heads and what actually happens, we feel the gap. Whereas nobody else has that vision in their heads. They only see what you present. And yeah, you're right that it's typically better than we think, or if there are areas that weren't ideal, then that's how you learn and fix it for next time.
And speaking of closing that gap, you have a really great exercise in your book that helped me a lot about videotaping yourself and being really strategic when you watch it back, which I thought was really cool. Can you expand a little bit more on that?
Absolutely. And actually, this came from when I worked at Google. I had an opportunity to attend a train the trainer type program. It was as I was going to be starting to teach courses on data visualization. And one of the really impactful things that we did as part of that was recorded ourselves and watched it back. And I was able to pick up a couple of really awful, irritating things that I did and just immediately put a stop to them. And so the way that I've put together the exercise in the book, Storytelling With You, is it's part of refining, which I believe is chapter 9. But basically, get some content that you know well. It could be a slide or two or a graph you want to talk through, or it doesn't even have to be work-related. Just talk about something, a topic that you know reasonably well, and record yourself for maybe about 5 minutes of content. And you want to record both audio and video. And if you're doing this with a particular presentation in mind, try as much as you can to emulate how you'll be doing that. For example, if you'll be standing, stand when you record yourself. If it's virtual and you're sitting at your desk, think about how you might record in that setting so that you can see how you'll fare in an environment that's similar to how you'll be presenting. So you want to record about 5 minutes, and then I'm going to have you watch it back 3 times. The first time is really just to get over yourself, to put it bluntly. We all sound and look different than we think we do. And it is always a painful process to watch and listen to oneself. And so that first viewing is really just to get over that initial reaction of, I don't really look like that.
The self-loathing
really sound
version.
Like that. Yes, exactly. Get over that. And then the next two are the productive ones. Well, I guess that's productive too. So for one of these, and it doesn't matter which order you do it, you're going to want to turn off your video or not look at your video and just listen. This allows you to really understand the words that you're using. If filler words are an issue, they will jump out at you at this point. But just understanding how you sound. And you will pick up on the things that don't work, likely. But the sorts of things in particular you can listen for is, how's your speed? Are you too fast? Are you too slow? Is there some variety? How is your volume? Can you hear yourself? Do you go in and out? Are you, you know, moving in any strange ways that's making the volume come across in a not ideal way? Which would be probably even more useful if you're speaking to a microphone in a virtual setting. But in any case, you know, what are you doing with your voice? Are you pausing? Allowing time for important thoughts to sink in, or to allow yourself time to breathe so that you have enough voice to get through what you want to say. You'll hear these things, but those are some specifics to listen for. And then on another review, you'll mute the volume and just watch yourself. And this, you'll note the things that you do that work well, or probably you'll pay more attention to the things that don't work so well. But this is where you'll see, are you making any funny faces? Or how's your body language? Do you look comfortable? Are you doing anything off-putting? So this is one of the things when I first did this at Google, I watched myself back and I was wearing heels, as I often do when I present, and I was rocking on them. I had no awareness that I was doing this, but it made me do this sway throughout the entire 5 minutes that I think if someone had said to me, you know what, you're swaying on your feet, it's a little distracting, it would have been easy to wave off as mm-hmm. feedback. But seeing myself do it, wow, that was really annoying and unnecessary. And I was able to put a stop to it immediately. So recording yourself is a way of just getting this lens into how you look and sound from another perspective that can be fantastically useful when you're trying to hone those things. Mm-hmm. And I would say out of that, you know, if you come up with a laundry list of things you want to change, just focus on one or two at a time and make small improvements. And over time, those small changes will add up to big progress.
Mm-hmm. When I read that in the book, it was pretty close to a big presentation that I had to give. So I decided to try it. I was like, okay, let's see what I'd see.
I love it.
I found that the third one where you watch without any audio was the biggest thing because I realized that I gesticulate a lot. So I wave my hands around a lot. And if you don't have the audio that goes with it, you can just see like how crazy you look. I was like, okay, gotta take the gesticulations on just a little bit because it feels like I'm like flailing a bit.
Yeah.
And another thing was that when I'm trying to like talk about something that I find very serious, my passion kind of came out as like furrowed brow.
Yeah, as soon as you started talking about it, you did.
Yes. Yeah. And it's a really hard for me to stop, but I just knowing that I do that, it helps me correct it a little bit more because I look angry and I couldn't really see that when I was listening to it. But when I'm looking at it and I don't know what I'm saying, I can see, why do I look so mad? Nobody wants to watch someone talking who looks mad.
Right. Well, it's funny. So Alex on the team always refers to her onboarding as like the hazing period. And it didn't even strike me at the time, but I was so Alex and Mike were hired at the same time. This was a few years back. And we had an offsite. Everybody was together. And then they were training to be able to deliver workshops. And so all of it was done remotely where they every week would send me a video of the lesson that they learned. And the video was of them teaching. Uh-huh. And, she talks about it like, wow, you know, that was a lot getting used to seeing myself present and like coming up with something I was happy with to send you every week
for the course
of like 8 or 10 weeks. Mm-hmm. Right. But it also built such a cool habit and comfort with recording oneself and using that to improve. And that's something that we do across the team in ways that I think we didn't design maybe that way or didn't think about this benefit of it when we were doing it, right? We did it that way for other reasons, but that has been hugely helpful. One really cool thing is if you let some time pass, because, you know, oftentimes when progress is slow, we don't necessarily see it in ourselves. But when you can go back to one of those early recordings, all right, I do this on YouTube sometimes, I'll see a clip of myself from years ago. I'm like, oh, I'm glad that I'm more comfortable.
Look at all my growth.
I came right now than I used to be, right? Look at all the growth. That can be useful. That's why I'm a fan also of when you are presenting, I think going into it, knowing what you want to improve that time, but then reflecting afterwards as well. And if you do that as almost a diary entry, then you have that to be able to go back to over time as well, where you can say, wow, hey, look, you know, 2 years ago, I was focused on not saying the word like every other word. And now, you know, I'm still focused on a filler word, but it's a very different, you know, mm-hmm. you see the progress over time, which can be fun thing and just help you recognize the progress that you are making over time.
Have you noticed how nervousness shows up in your presentation or like, you know, just in your body? Has that changed over time for you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There are scenarios where I would feel nervous. I would be shaking. We would be questioning, it's a group of surgeons. I remember one time, a group of surgeons, like, what am I going to teach them? Why am I here? Those sorts of things that today, if it were the same group, it's like, well, no, I might still have some nervous energy before I walk out or in those first few moments, but now I'm able to harness that and use it as productive adrenaline mm-hmm. as opposed to something that's going to inhibit me. And you can feel this. Anyone can feel this. And oftentimes people will feel it naturally before they're going to present or before they're doing something that makes them nervous. But body language, we have a way of internalizing it. And so actually anybody listening can do this exercise along with me, which is assume some not great body language, right? So like hunch your shoulders forward, mm-hmm. kind of roll into yourself. You could even like make your hands shake on purpose mm-hmm. and just notice. I mean, you can hear it probably, right? How my voice sounds. Mm-hmm. And versus if we put our shoulders back, smile, breathe deeply, I sound different. Mm-hmm. I feel different. And those things are going to help me come across more confident, more positive. And so you can assume this body language of confidence, even if you're not feeling it. Mm-hmm. And over time, you'll internalize that.
Yeah, that's a great point. I have noticed that if I move my hands slower, then it leads me to speak slower. So that's kind of something I've tried to do over time is since my nervousness comes out in speaking fast and my hands go with that, if I slow the hands first and then everything will follow. So I like the idea of like doing the body stuff first and then hopefully like the emotional things kind of follow.
Yeah, and they do. And it's a great feeling when you're able to contrast how it felt before and then how it feels. And there definitely is a helpful fake it till you make it aspect here, where if you do these things, right, you assume good body stance, and especially in ways that allow your lungs to be able to inflate fully so that you have full voice, right? For me, shaky voice was a big thing. Because the problem would be I'd be nervous, and so I wouldn't be breathing deeply. I'd be talking fast, so I also wouldn't be taking full breaths in mm-hmm. between anything. Mm-hmm. And then over time, my voice would start to flutter because I didn't have enough air crossing my airway and into my lungs to be able to project. And then I'd hear myself get nervous. And then that cycle just perpetuates.
Like everybody's hearing it. Everyone's hating this.
Yes. This is my voice on loudspeaker, right? Because I'm talking into the microphone and I can hear it shaking there mm-hmm. too. Yeah, bad, right? But if you can exude the confidence, breathe deeply, pause. Pauses are fantastic, both from a just generally punctuating the way in which you speak, but also it gives you time to breathe, mm-hmm. which is really important. Mm-hmm. And pauses are super powerful and I think often overlooked because when you're talking in front of a group, they can feel very uncomfortable. So if you can find ways to do that, right? So you talk about slowing down, your hands helps you slow down. Actually, just stop talking for mm-hmm. a while can be another way to do it. And again, it feels super awkward at first. And you can decide when might it make sense to pause? When do I need to work them in? I can remember notes that I would have to myself in presentations where I would actually write the word pause in big, bold letters just as a reminder to myself. And so I'd plan ahead of time when I was going to pause and let my breathing catch up so that I wouldn't get into this cycle of, you know, I'm talking, yes. not breathing enough and getting out of control. And so where you can either work in times when other people are talking, right? So maybe you pose a question and take some time yeah. where other people are weighing in, or you turn something back to the group, or you have a co-presenter so that you can bounce things back and forth, but also just actually pausing. And at first you can count, right? If you are working in a pause and it's for effect, or if I'm going to pose a question and I want to allow time for people to absorb that question, decide whether they're going to respond, gather their thoughts, and then respond, that takes time. Yeah. It takes even more time if you're virtual, right? Because people have to physically type or unmute themselves or do these things.
Stop multitasking.
Exactly. That can be a great place to say, all right, I'm going to pose this question. I might say it a couple ways so that it gets across. And then I'm going to pause until somebody says something. Or I'm going to pause and count to 10. Mm. And then if it's more the like stand on stage, give a presentation, decide when you're going to do that to make a point and punctuate that important point with pauses. Mm-hmm. And those are the sorts of things that I'm never a fan of memorizing, because if you forget something that you meant to memorize, that can really throw you off in the moment. But I'm a big fan of committing certain things to memory. And that can be if there's an important point that you want to make, right? So you have those words down, you're able to hit them, you're able to say them with force as needed and mm-hmm. pause around them. It can also be useful to commit the first few things you're going to say to memory. And again, not necessarily the words you're going to use, but if I know in the first 5 minutes of my time in front of this group, I want to hit these 5 points, then I'll practice talking through them aloud multiple times where I know I'm going to get to the 5 points, but I might talk about them a little differently or meander through them differently or connect them differently every time I talk through them. But after doing that a couple of times, now I know that I know what those 5 points are, and I know that I can gracefully get from one to the next in a variety of different ways, mm-hmm. which means now when I have the nerves of standing in front of somebody and doing this, I'm already practiced. I know it. I have it committed to memory. And this is particularly useful at the beginning of your time, because that often is when people have a bit of nerves if they're going to, and that those first few minutes are usually enough to get you past that, so that once you've gotten past, you know, the 5 points or whatever it is, now you're in your element, you're talking, you're kind of, you're feeling and can be in the moment. Another excuse to pause can be to take a sip of something, right? Mm-hmm. Have water or coffee or tea within reach. So you can say something and then you can pause and give yourself a little breathing room. But
I have noticed that when other people pause, it gives me a chance to catch up, and I appreciate it. And when someone isn't pausing, I just think, oh gosh, this is getting kind of overwhelming. It's just information.
One thing runs into the next, into the next, into the next. Mm-hmm. I think about if you're ever writing down a note, you want to remember something that someone just said or a point that they made. And if they're still talking, you're now missing what they're saying mm-hmm. versus if they paused. You're absolutely right. It gives everybody else a moment to let things sink in, because you as the speaker likely know where you're going to go next and you kind of just want to get there.
Yeah.
But other people are hearing these words probably for the first time, or hearing you say them for the mm-hmm. first time. And so letting there be space so that people can come along with you or ask questions or participate along the way can be really useful.
Yeah, that's a good reframe. It's not, the pauses aren't awkward. It's a service to your audience.
Yes.
Okay, last question, which is very important to me personally. So my personality tends to be, well, it is just more giggly and bubbly, even though I am an introvert, but just, you know, that's just my personality. And I am always at this tug of war internally on, should I tamper that down when I'm speaking in front of people, or how much should I tamper it down so I come across a certain way? You know, so what is your take on how much you should let your personality come through, and even if it's maybe undermining you in some kind of way?
Ooh, okay. I love this one. So I think I'll start off by saying we always want to be authentic when we're communicating, because if you try to put on somebody else's style or somebody else's voice, it's not going to work. It's going to not feel comfortable for you, and others will pick up on that. So while I think it's useful to watch others and say, okay, here are some things I might want to emulate, you want to do that in a way that's still genuine and feels authentic to you. But that said, we all have these dials that we can dial up or we can dial down. And I think the thing you want to think about when you're trying to decide, do I dial it up, do I dial it down, is what are you trying to get across to your audience? And actually, in the penultimate chapter of Storytelling With You, chapter 11, it's about the art of the introduction, which I love as a case study for practicing presenting, because everybody knows this topic super well, right? Mm-hmm. The topic of yourself. You know yourself, you know your story. And one of the things that I have people do as part of this is get a specific scenario in mind and think about what are the perceptions you want to create in the others who are listening mm-hmm. or watching you. And being really specific about this. And you can start by brainstorming a wide swath of perceptions. Usually these are adjectives, right? I want to be funny, or I want to be engaging. And then narrow it down to maybe 2 or 3 primary things that you really want to get across. And so maybe I do this exercise, and for a given setting, I want to come across as competent, knowledgeable, and articulate. Right? So if those are the perceptions that I want to create, then what dials do I dial up and dial down? So in that case, I might dial down the giggliness if that's a natural thing. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, though, if I do this exercise and I want to come across as friendly and approachable and kind, well, then I might actually dial that up. Mm-hmm. And so it really depends on the situation and what feelings you are trying to create on the part of those with whom you're communicating. So if you can do that, then you can say, all right, well, I can still do this, right? Or I can still laugh when I want to appear competent. I just may now have to dial something else up that's going to help me balance that out. Mm. And so you can take this really strategic, optimizing approach to communication. And that's the part I love about this and kind of hate about the history of people thinking about communication as a soft skill. Like, no, this is not. You can be so strategic and specific in how you do it and what you play with and what you adjust. And in the same way you can think about adjusting a statistical model for the best fit, mm-hmm. we can do that when we present. It's just the inputs are different.
That's great. Thank you so much, Cole. Is there any last piece of advice that you'd like to give our fellow introverts when they're trying to give data presentations, maybe taking that first tiny step?
Yeah, I think anytime you find yourself bumping up against a deadline and you are wanting to spend that time continuing to iterate on your content, right? You're continuing to play with the graph or the slide, or don't. Let the content be what it is and take that remaining time to think about how you can prepare yourself. What are the things you can do, as we've talked about, to help identify anything that might be making you nervous and take steps to take that off the table? Practice. And I mentioned this in passing earlier, but I'm a huge fan of practicing aloud so that you can hear yourself and vocalize, articulate transitions between things. You never want the first time you're going to say something to be in front of the people who's
it comes out different. It's different.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so practicing aloud and just spending time on yourself, not just your materials, because at the end of the day, your ability to talk about your work is going to be the thing that either engages or doesn't. And so the more time and thoughtful consideration you can give to that, the more you can use that superpower in really awesome ways.
Mm-hmm. And it is a very, very important superpower. Thank you so much, Cole, for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me, Allie. This has been fun.
Thank you, Cole, for sharing so many great presentation tips with us. Here are my final takeaways on how to be a more confident presenter. First of all, no more hiding behind the excuse that you're just not a good presenter. You just haven't spent the time practicing. You may need to spend more time practicing than someone else, but you can learn this skill. Second, if you stay in your comfortable space, you may not be able to have the impact that you want. You may need to seek out productive discomfort. That's discomfort for a specific purpose. Also, you may feel this huge discomfort while speaking and think everyone sees it, but it's highly likely that they're seeing just a small fraction of what you're feeling, if anything at all. But we do have those little physical manifestations of nervousness to deal with. Some are more noticeable or dramatic than others. Cole recommends first identify those specific things that happen to your body, and it's different for everyone. Cole said she used to be shaky. I talk way too fast and then can't take a breath. When you know the specific thing that you're trying to avoid, you can begin working on it. So if you're worried you'll forget something, write it down somewhere you can see it or add a prompt to your slides. Maybe you sweat a lot. Learn what clothes work best for that situation. Maybe eating before a presentation has a negative effect on you. For me, I've learned to slow my hand movements down to help me slow my speaking rate. It's a work in progress, and that's okay. Just work on identifying it so that you can plan for it. Now, try this exercise that Cole shared from her book, Storytelling With You. First, for this exercise, grab a slide or two of your presentation, or maybe you can use how you introduce yourself, and record yourself for about 5 minutes going through your slides. And then watch it back 3 times. Once is just to get over yourself. It's awful. It's okay. And then turn off the video and just listen to the recording. You'll hear your filler words, your speed, your volume. Are you breathing? Are you pausing? And then on the third watch, you're just going to watch the video again with no audio. Like when I did this, I found out that I was frowning and I couldn't tell why. Maybe you are making huge hand movements or rocking on your heels. This is a really refreshing lens to see yourself through, and you'll likely catch yourself doing a lot of weird stuff, which you can start working on. And Cole also suggests writing down those little things that you're working on and then occasionally go back and see what you used to be working on. And that will help remind yourself of how far you've actually come. Another little exercise you can do is to start making confident gestures and body language even before you feel confident. Like put your shoulders back, take a deep breath, then smile. That's often enough to start signaling to your brain that, yeah, I am confident. So try making the confident movements first, even if your brain and your heart aren't quite there yet, because they will catch up. And if you're like me, you get talking fast and blow past any opportunities to pause and let your breath catch up. But Cole points out that you can manufacture ways to pause, like ask a question and then count to 10 in your head to make sure you give your audience enough time to think about your question and then respond. Another great tip from Cole is to lean into your passion. People will forgive so many mistakes and, you know, frowning and talking too fast and all these things that we do that we think are bad. They will forgive a lot of stuff if you're passionate about what you're talking about. And if you focus on your passion, it will also help you stop thinking about your nerves. Now, my favorite question that I asked Cole was how we all have their little quirks about our personality. So how much do you push those things down when you're presenting if those things might undermine your authority? Well, Cole suggests to think of it like dials. It's not on and off. Just consider what are a couple words that describe how you want to come across in your presentation, like competent or articulate or friendly. And then what dials do you need to turn up and down so you can make that happen? We're not hiding parts of ourselves. We're just turning down the volume if it's not serving us in the way that we want. And finally, if you find yourself making more and more tweaks to your data presentation, just stop. Use that extra time to practice your presentation out loud and think about yourself and how you want to come across. How you talk about your work is going to determine how engaging it is. And I want to share a tip that my dentist, of all people, taught me. I was getting some dental work done, and she could tell I was getting a little tense and nervous. And she said, breathe through your nose and wiggle your toes. And it actually works wonders. At the time, it totally got me out of my head and made me feel less tense. And since then, I have been using it all the time right before I speak. So try next time you find yourself mentally spiraling and getting nervous and tense, think, breathe through your nose, wiggle your toes. Thanks again, Cole. Grab a copy of Cole's book, Storytelling With You, if you'd like step-by-step help planning and giving presentations for your team. So many hard-earned tips and tricks are in this book. I believe in you. I believe that you can become a skilled presenter, just like I believe in you that you can be a creative thinker in data communication. If you want to learn how to think more creatively and have a toolbox of 9 exercises to use to coax out your creative ideas, then grab a copy of my book, ChartSpark. It's available in paperback, ebook, PDF, and audiobook. Yay! Go to chartsparkbook.com, or there's a link to everything we talked about in the show notes at datavistoday.com/show-notes/94. I'm Allie Torben, and remember, every creative act has value. All you have to do is begin. Talk to you soon. Bye now.